Now, effective going for refuge is twofold. It's general and it's specific. General going for refuge has for its object the three jewels in the ordinary sense, which is extraordinary enough, the sense of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. The specific going for refuge has for its object the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha in their esoteric forms. That is to say, as Guru, Deva, and Dakini. And these are what we call the esoteric refuges, and Kuladeva had something to say about them yesterday. I'm going to say a few words about each of them too, especially about the third of these esoteric refuges. Now, why are they called esoteric? Why are they called secret? Guhya. Not because they've been deliberately hidden, not because they're sort of artificially kept secret. They're secret because they're difficult to communicate, difficult to convey from one person to another. But why are they difficult to communicate? They're difficult to communicate because they are matters of experience. And experience is difficult to communicate. Ideas are easy to communicate. Concepts are easy to communicate. Even philosophies, systems of philosophy. But one's own deep, individual, personal experience, which is so unique, so peculiar to oneself, which is so ineffable, is very difficult indeed to communicate. And the more something is a matter of experience, the more difficult it is to communicate, and the more therefore it is secret. Not because you try to keep it a secret, you may want to communicate it very much, very deeply, but the fact that it is your experience and you're trying to communicate it to somebody else with maybe a different kind of experience, a different outlook, even different language, makes it very difficult to communicate. Hence it's esoteric. Experience as such is esoteric, is secret, is guhya. And as we know, the esoteric refuges occur within the context of the Vajrayana, the third of the three yanas. And the Vajrayana is par excellence, the yana of experience. The other yanas are yanas of experience too in their own way, but not so thoroughly, deeply, or radically as the Vajrayana. And because it's the yana of experience, the Vajrayana is also the yana of practice, because no experience without practice. The Vajrayana, in fact, is all practice. It has no theory, no philosophy of its own. It's all practice, all experience. So one may say that the esoteric refuges are that aspect of the exoteric refuges, that is to say the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, which one personally experiences. And that may be very little indeed. After all, we don't see the Buddha. We don't see Gautama the Buddha. We don't see Shakyamuni. Where is he? We don't see him. We don't experience him. Not directly. Maybe indirectly, to a limited extent. We read about him in the scriptures. We see the image. We see the murti, the icon. But we don't see the Buddha himself. We don't experience the Buddha himself. We'd have to have lived 2,500 years ago to do that. So we've no experience of the Buddha at all. We say, to the Buddha for refuge I go. But what meaning is that? How can you go for refuge to a Buddha that you have never seen? Do you go for refuge to an idea? Do you go for refuge to the image? Are you an idol worshipper? As the Christians sometimes accuse us of being. So, it's very difficult to go for refuge to the Buddha, because you don't see the Buddha and therefore don't experience him. But you do see the Guru. You do experience the Guru. So, according to the Vajrayana, for practical purposes, the Guru is the refuge. If you get into difficulties, if you want some advice, if you want teaching specifically related to your needs, you don't go to the Buddha. You can't go to the Buddha. Even if you read the scriptures, it's too general, too broad, even too vague. You go to the Guru, and he gives you exactly what you need for your particular situation. And this is what is meant when we say that the Guru refuge is the esoteric, or maybe we should say the experiential form of the Buddha refuge. And it's the same in the case of the Dharma. The Dharma is so vast. The Buddha Dharma is just like an ocean, an infinite ocean. Sometimes we're told that it consists of an infinite number of teachings, an infinite number of sections. But in a more limited sense, traditionally, it's said to consist of 84,000 independent sections or teachings, or interdependent sections or teachings. And one, of course, may know, theoretically, quite a few hundred of these 84,000 Dharma skandhas, as they're called. One may even know a few thousand. But even if you know a few hundred or a few thousand, how many has one actually practiced out of all those? And it's that that really counts. So it's the Dharma which we have actually experienced. It's that Dharma which is the Dharma to which we really go for refuge. This is the esoteric Dharma refuge, the Deva refuge. We go for refuge only to the Dharma we actually practice in any real, deep, living sense. And for the Vajrayana, this is primarily the chosen Buddha or Bodhisattva on whom we regularly meditate, because we've at least actually experienced him or her in our meditation. So the Deva refuge is the esoteric form of the Dharma refuge. And then the Sangha. We go for refuge to the Sangha. But the Sangha consists of millions of individuals, both mundane and transcendental, past, present and future. We can't possibly have contact with all of them. We can't go for refuge to the whole Sangha. That's impossible, incredible, inconceivable. We're going to have contact with only a very limited number of Sangha members. So therefore we go for refuge, actually, in practice, in our own experience, only to a very limited number of members of the Sangha, the spiritual community, perhaps only to two or three, or even one. One's the minimum. And this is the Dakini. The Dakini is that part of the Sangha with which we have real, living, spiritual contact. And the Dakini refuge is therefore the esoteric form of the Sangha refuge. But I must warn you here, there's some possibility, in some cases even actuality, of misunderstanding. The word Dakini happens to be in the feminine gender. And therefore, Dakini, or the concept of Dakini, is sometimes interpreted as a sort of female partner, a sort of pseudo-spiritual girlfriend with whom one allegedly practices the Dharma. But it's not that at all. The Dakini, and there is a masculine form of this noun, Dhaka, a Dakini is any member of the spiritual community with whom one is in close personal contact, who sparks one off spiritually, even inspires one. That's what is meant by Dakini. But there's another way of looking at Dakini, perhaps even more important and more profound. The Dakini, in any sense, is not really even anyone outside one at all. After all, one should be able to spark oneself off. A committed person, who is an integrated person, should be able to do this. What the Dakini really represents is the higher, more refined emotional side of one's own being. That's what the beautiful figure of the Dakini represents. The Dakini represents friendliness, is friendliness. The Dakini is compassion. The Dakini is sympathetic joy. The Dakini is peace and tranquility. The Dakini is faith and devotion. And all these higher, more refined, more spiritual, positive emotions are to be developed within oneself. Does this then mean that the Sangha refuge can be dispensed with? Does it mean that spiritual fellowship is unimportant because you just go on sparking off yourself, apparently? Does it mean that communication is unimportant? No, it doesn't mean that. It means that you cannot go for refuge to the Sangha, to the Dakini, unless you have your own Dakini within. We may say that Dakini goes for refuge to Dakini. We may say Dakini communicates with Dakini. In other words, within the context of the spiritual community, the spiritual fellowship, our communication with one another is through our own higher emotional natures, or with the help of our own higher emotional natures. We cannot communicate just with the intellect. You cannot really communicate just through ideas or through concepts. Only through, or with the help of, your own higher, more spiritual, more refined emotions. In other words, only through your own personal, which means your integrated Dakini, addressing, as it were, the Dakini of the other individual. So Dakini more or less corresponds with what our own English William Blake calls the emanation. I don't remember Blake's exact words, but he says something like that in the perfect state, perhaps in the state of eternity, individuals converse with one another through their emanations. And what does this mean? It means that without genuine spiritual emotion, there is no communication. If you're merely intellectual, no communication. You may talk for ages, talk the hind legs of a donkey, as we say, but there'll be no communication. You'll just be talking, and you'll feel very dry and barren, and dusty, as it were, as though there was dust in your mouth at the end. If you only communicate through the medium of concepts, if you only talk philosophy in this dry, academic, pseudo-intellectual sort of way, there'll be no communication. It's just the dry bones of concepts rubbing up against one another and generating, kindling, no spark, no warmth whatsoever, and leaving you rather dull and dry and dissatisfied afterwards. No. Genuine communication is only through or with the help of emotion, warmth, friendliness, and in the spiritual context, context of spiritual community, only with the help or through the higher spiritual emotions. And this is what is meant by the Dakini refuge. Now, by emotion, one doesn't mean anything soft or sloppy or sentimental. One means it's more in the Abhidharma sense of positive mental events. But that's enough of the effective going for refuge, let's go on now, more briefly, to the next level.